Mary stepped forward and put an arm around Jenny's shaking shoulders.
It's all right. We understand. We'll speak to the union leaders. They need to hear you, even if they don't know it yet. You stay here. We'll get things moving.
She gave Jenny a last comforting squeeze and gestured with her head for Topaz to open the door. She did so, her face entirely impassive. Mary steered Jenny back into her chair. Then she and Topaz left the study, leaving Jenny Psycho slumped in her chair like an exhausted child. They shut the door firmly behind them and moved off down the corridor.
Not too tightly wrapped, is she?
Few of us are these days. But she does seem to be an extreme case. If we don't handle this one with kid gloves, we could end up with a multiple personality on our hands, and a bloody powerful one at that. Whatever touched her in Silo 9, it was a power far beyond my experience. I'm not even sure it was human. Could it really have been the Mater Mundi?
Topaz shrugged uncomfortably.
The Mater Mundi is as good an answer as any, whoever or whatever that might be. You're right. The leaders have to see her, if only so we can be sure of controlling her. God knows how much damage she could do if we let her run loose.
Poor Jenny. She's been through so much.
Haven't we all?
Owen Deathstalker walked alone through the packed streets of the Merchant's Quarter, working his way into a world-class bad temper. His mood wasn't helped by the fact that he wasn't very good at following directions. He'd only been this way once before, and that was with Hazel leading the way, and he hadn't paid much attention at the time. Luckily, Ozymandias remembered the way. Owen strode on through the quarter, concentrating fiercely on where he was going, so he wouldn't have to think about Hazel alone with John Silver. He had no right to be jealous, but still, he loved her in his way, and would no matter what she thought of him. If she ever thought of him. Owen sighed and pressed on, and eventually he ended up in front of the seedy, ramshackle building that housed the Abraxas Information Center. Abraxas knew everything that was going on in Mistport, sometimes even before the people concerned knew it. Abraxas could answer all your questions, soothe your worries, or confirm your worst nightmares, for the right price. Abraxas had the first floor over a family bakery. There was no sign advertising its presence. Everyone knew where Abraxas was. The last time Owen had been here, he'd learned many things, some useful, some disturbing. Among other things, Abraxas had told him how he would die. Owen shuddered suddenly. But even the best precogs were wrong as often as they were right, or they'd have been running the Empire by now. Still, he had to talk to Abraxas again. A lot had happened since that last trip to Mistworld, not least his passing through the Madness Maze. That had to change things. In many ways, he was a completely new person now. Hell, everyone knows you can't trust precogs.
So, whom do you trust?
I wish you'd stop talking to me. You know very well you're dead.
So maybe I'm haunting you. Answer the question. Whom do you trust these days?
I trust my companions. I have to. My only hope for survival is to throw Lionstone off the Iron Throne. For that, I need a rebellion. And for that, I need allies.
Is that the only reason you're fighting to change the way things are?
No. I've seen too much of the everyday evil and suffering the Empire is based on. I can't look away anymore. Things must change, even if it means my life.
You mean your death? What are you going to replace the Empire with? What else do you know but the privilege of aristocracy and the rule of families?
Beats me. Let's win the war first. We can argue about whatever the hell comes next once we're safe from Lionstone's spite. Whatever we end up with, it can't be worse than what we've got.
Famous last words. You're an historian, Owen. You know what happens after rebellions. The winning sides turn on each other and fight to the death to determine which particular faction will replace the old order. Either way, the odds are the victors will have little use for a dyed-in-the-blood aristo like you. You could end up plunging the Empire into a civil war that could last for centuries and leave planets burning in the endless night.
Shut up. I have business with Abraxas, and I can't talk to you there. They wouldn't understand about dead AIs. Oz chuckled briefly and fell silent. Owen clambered up the rickety exterior stairs to the upper floor entrance. There was no bell, of course. Owen hammered on the door with his fist and kicked it a few times for good measure. It made him feel better. After a pause, just long enough to make sure Owen understood his place, the door swung open, and the man called Chance filled the doorway. He looked Owen over, then gestured for him to enter. Owen did so, his head held high. The place hadn't changed. Two lines of ramshackle cots filled the long, narrow room, pressed close together, with an aisle down the center. On the cots lay dozing children, from 4 or 5 years old to emaciated, spindly teenagers. Intravenous drips fed nutrients into their veins, and catheters carried everything else away into grimy jars. The children were espers, brain damaged as often as not, too weak to survive on a harsh world like Mistworld. Chance bought them from their parents and used their esp abilities to spread a telepathic web over all of Mistport, seeing and hearing everything. And that was Abraxas. Chance kept the children alive as long as he could. It was in his interest to do so. But none of them ever survived to adulthood. It didn't affect Abraxas. There were always more. The children were loyal to Chance, sleeping and awake. He was the nearest thing to a friend most of them had ever known. Chance, founder and manager of the Abraxas Information Center, was a large, muscular man, almost as broad as he was tall, wearing black leathers with metal studs. Half his face was hidden behind a complex and very ugly tattoo. His smile was meaningless, his eyes were too bright, and he didn't blink often enough. Owen often wondered if Chance had been crazy before he started Abraxas, or if endless exposure to death and suffering had sent him over the edge. Either way, Owen maintained a safe distance and kept his hand near his sword. Chance nodded to him.
Knew you'd be back, Deathstalker. What could I do for you this time?
Don't you know? You must be slipping, Chance. I have questions that need answering.
That's what we're here for. I feel I should point out, you exhausted all your credit the last time you honored us with your presence, and my prices have risen dramatically. You understand how it is. Small businesses always have to fight to stay afloat.
Your business exists because my father's money made it possible. Technically, as his only heir, I inherited Abraxas.
You were outlawed. All assets attached to the Deathstalker name were confiscated by the Empress. And besides, this is Mistport, where possession is every part of the law. Abraxas is mine.
Owen smiled humorlessly. I think you have me confused with someone who gives a damn. I'm back in Mistport to revitalize the old Deathstalker information network and make it part of the ongoing rebellion again. And that very definitely includes you and Abraxas. Since, for my sins, I'm one of the people currently leading the rebellion, Abraxas answers to me. So if you want to keep your presumably very well-paid managerial position, I strongly suggest you stop pissing me about. Got it?
You couldn't run Abraxas without me. The children are mine, body and soul.
They'd soon get over you. Children are so very adaptable, after all. Chance thought about it.
You'd risk ruining my operation just to get control?
Of course. I'm a Deathstalker. We've a long history of getting our way, and to hell with where the chips fall.
What do you want to know, Deathstalker?
That's more like it. I have a question.
Keep it specific, if you want a specific answer. My children are espers, not oracles.
Ask them who killed my father. Which person, specifically? Chance nodded, and made his way slowly down the central aisle, looking speculatively from one child to another. Owen watched impassively, hiding his own surprise at the question he'd asked. It hadn't been the one he intended to start with. His father had been cut down in the street by an assassin in the pay of the Empress, and at the time, Owen hadn't really been surprised. He just assumed that one of his father's many plots and intrigues had finally caught up with him. Mostly, Owen had just felt annoyed at the disruption the sudden death had brought to his previously well-ordered life. He hadn't asked who the killer was. He hadn't cared, then. Arthur Hadrian Deathstalker, tall and handsome and ruthlessly charming, had delighted in schemes and intrigues, sometimes apparently just for their own sake, which meant he hadn't had much time to spend on his son. When he remembered he had a son and heir, he ran Owen's life with an iron hand, doing as he thought best, and to hell with what Owen might want. His was not a cheerful presence, and their few conversations increasingly deteriorated into blazing rows. The Deathstalker never understood that his son considered himself a scholar, rather than a warrior. When Owen heard that his father was dead, his first feeling was one of relief. He was finally out of his father's clutches, and free to be his own man at last. It was only in recent times that Owen had finally begun to understand the forces that had moved and driven his father. Just by being the Deathstalker, Arthur had many enemies both in and outside Lionstone's court. An aristocrat on Golgotha could no more avoid intrigue than a fish could avoid the water it swam in. And above all that, Arthur had believed in rebellion. Whether for the sake of the Empire, or for his own amusement and advancement, Owen still wasn't entirely sure. But more and more, he was inclined to give his father the benefit of the doubt. As his own eyes were opened to the evils and horrors the Empire was based on, he understood the need to fight it by any means necessary. He still couldn't bring himself to love or forgive his father. The man who'd ordered his trainers to beat the crap out of his son over and over again, trying to force to the surface the secret inheritance of the Deathstalkers, the Boost. A mixture of engineered glands and special training that for short periods made a Deathstalker stronger, faster, and sharper than any normal man. The process worked eventually, but Owen only remembered the pain in the blood, all to give him access to something he didn't want anyway. Only recently had Owen begun to understand that his father had been desperate to make him a fighter rather than a scholar, because he knew a scholar wouldn't be able to survive the forces that would be unleashed by his death. And he'd been right. As Owen became a leader of the new rebellion and a fighter for justice, so he became his father's son at last. And only once he understood that truth at last did he begin to understand how much he'd lost and how much he needed to know who'd murdered his father. He looked up as Chance beckoned him impatiently and moved over to join the big man, standing over a cot, holding a girl who couldn't have been more than 10. The child wore a shabby dress, 2 sizes too large, and she stirred constantly, as though disturbed by loud voices only she could hear. Her eyes were closed, but she muttered the odd word or phrase now and again. None of them made any sense to Owen. Chance knelt beside her and produced a paper bag half full of candies. He chose one, rolled it between his fingers till it was soft and pliant, then eased it into the girl's slack mouth. She began to chew slowly. Chance put his mouth right next to her ear.
"Time to play the game, Katie. Time to tell me all those things you know. I have Owen Deathstalker here with me. He wants to know who killed his father. Whose hand guided the blade that took his life? Who was it, Katie?"
The girl frowned, her mouth pursing unhappily, but she didn't wake. She swallowed the piece of candy and spoke in a clear, pure voice.
"You asked me that long ago. The answer hasn't changed. It was the Smiling Killer, the shark in shallow waters, the man who will not be stopped save by his own hand. Kid Death killed the Deathstalker."
Owen nodded slowly, his face impassive, while his hands closed into fists. He hadn't been expecting that particular name, but it didn't exactly come as a surprise, either. Kid Death, the Empress's favorite paid assassin for a while, also known as Lord Kitsummerisle, now a backer of the rebellion, and a friend of the distant cousin who'd taken the title of Lord Deathstalker after Owen was outlawed. Both currently headed for Viramond, the planet Owen had once owned and ruled. It didn't matter. It didn't matter that Kit and Owen were on the same side now. Owen would kill him anyway, once the rebellion didn't need him anymore. Kitsummerisle was a dead man, along with anyone who got in Owen's way. Anyone at all. Owen smiled slowly, and his fists unclenched. Something to look forward to.
You didn't come here just to ask me that.
The young girl's eyes moved back and forth under her closed eyelids.
There's something else. Something you need to know. Ask me. Ask me.
All right. There was a tightness in Owen's chest, and he had to fight to keep his voice steady. The last time I was here, one of you told me how I would die. I need to know if it's still true. Has anything changed?
No. You die here in Mistport, alone and forsaken, fighting odds too great to be beaten by any man. And after you're dead, they'll even steal your boots.
When? When does this happen?
That's a time question.
The young girl turned her head away.
I've never understood time.
Try. Try, damn it! Owen reached down to grab the child by the shoulders and shake her, but Chance was there first, pulling him away. Owen threw the big man off easily, but the moment had passed, and he was in control again. He stood over the sleeping child, breathing heavily. Then he turned away.
It doesn't matter. I've always known I'd been on borrowed time ever since Viramond. I was supposed to die there. Only a miracle saved me. And a man can't expect more than one miracle in one lifetime. Still, it's hard to hear your own death sentence, and know there's nothing you can do to change it.
If you don't want the answers, don't ask the questions. And I told you before, you can't trust precogs. If everything they said was reliable, I'd be a rich man by now. For instance, they've all been saying for some time now that something bad is coming to Mistport, but I can't get two of them to agree on what the hell it might be. All I've got is a name, Legion. But so far, the only unpleasant thing to turn up here is you.
It doesn't matter. If I have to die, I'll die well, as a Deathstalker should.
Oh, very poetic. God save me from heroes. Look, I have a business to run. Don't let the door hit your butt on the way out.
Cut the crap. We still have business to discuss.
My first questions were strictly on my own behalf. Now we get to the serious stuff. I'm here representing the Golgotha Underground, and on their behalf, I'm officially reawakening and revitalizing my father's old information network here in Mistport. He didn't fund just you and the Braxis. There are dozens of people and businesses all through this city that he established and supported in return for the gathering and passing on of useful information. Some of them went on to be very successful indeed, movers and shakers in the big city. The information started drying up after my father's murder. Presumably they thought his death freed them from their obligations. I'm here to tell them different. I'm the Deathstalker now, and I'm calling in my father's markers, with interest. The old network will rise again, this time supplying information to the new rebellion, or I will personally bankrupt every one of the sons of bitches, including you, Chance. You can start by supplying the names and locations you know, and then we'll get the rest from these espers of yours. You will then assist me in setting up a meeting of all concerned parties, somewhere today. In fact, within the next 2 hours, if they want to hang on to all their business interests and several vital organs. Get moving, Chance. I've a lot to do, and perhaps not as much time as I thought to get it done in.
Chance made contact with the right people through his espers. At the appointed time, Chance led Owen down the dizzying maze of narrow streets that made up the center of Mistport. They passed out of Merchant's Quarter and into Guild's Quarter. They finally came to a halt outside one of the older guild halls. Chance led the way in. There were two armed guards at the front door. They bowed respectfully to Chance and ignored Owen. He didn't kill them. He didn't want to make a scene. Yet. Inside, the main foyer was large and comfortable and extremely respectable.
There was much polished wooden wall paneling, and the various furnishings and fittings were luxurious to the point of opulence. And the whole place positively smelled of money, like an old family bank. Owen felt almost homesick. As they strode in the doorway, a butler strode imperiously toward them, wearing an old-fashioned cutaway coat, a powdered wig, and a practiced sneer of utter condescension. Chance showed the butler his business card, and the man bowed briefly, a mere tilting of the head. He took Chance's and Owen's cloaks, and then demanded they turn over their respective weapons to him. That was when the trouble started.
"I don't hand my weapons over to anyone."
"Don't make a fuss."
Chance unbuckled his belt and handed over his sword.
"It's nothing personal. Just standard security. Everyone does it."
"I'm not everyone, and my weapons stay with me.
They'd feel naked without me."
"I must insist,"
the butler said in icy tones.
"We don't let just anyone walk in off the street, you know."
The unconscious butler's body made a satisfyingly loud thud as it hit the floor. People everywhere turned to look.
"He's with me, much as I wish he wasn't. He is expected."
The polite murmur of conversation resumed.
"Please don't do that again. This way. Try not to kill anyone important."
They pressed on into the depths of the guild hall, Chance leading the way in something of a hurry. Finally, they came to a dead end, personified by a grim, entirely unsmiling secretary behind a desk in an outer office, set there to protect her boss from unwanted visitors.
"If you don't have an appointment, there's nothing I can do for you. You may make an appointment if you wish, but I can tell you now that Mr. Neeson has no openings in his calendar for the next several weeks."
Chance looked at Owen.
"This is as far as I could get you. Some obstacles are simply too great. Please don't hit her."
"Wouldn't think of it."
Owen leaned over the desk to stare into the secretary's flinty eyes. "I am Owen Deathstalker. My father's money paid for this business. I've come to call in the IOU. Right now." With that, Owen stepped back, drew his sword, raised it above his head, and brought it hammering down. The heavy blade sheared clean through the wooden desk, cleaving it into two jagged halves that fell away to either side of the secretary.
"I think you should go right in, Lord Deathstalker. I'm sure Mr. Neeson can find a few minutes to see you. I'll make sure you're not disturbed."
"You'd make a terrific diplomat."
Owen strode over to the far door and rattled the door handle. It was locked. He tut-tutted loudly and hit the door with his shoulder. It burst inward, one hinge torn right out of the wooden frame. Owen pushed the door back, carefully straightening it up again, and smiled at the half-dozen men sitting around the long table before him.
"Knock, knock. I'm Owen Deathstalker, and you're in big trouble. Any questions?"
"Come in, Lord Deathstalker. We've been expecting you."
"Yeah, I'll just bet you have."
Owen looked back at Chance.
"Find a chair, sit down, and keep quiet. I don't want any distractions."
"Suits me."
Owen moved to stand at the end of the long table, and all their eyes snapped back to him. They weren't afraid of him. They'd been rich and secure for so long they'd got out of the habit of being afraid of anyone. Owen smiled briefly. He'd changed that.
"Would you like me to identify these people? I have all their details in my databanks."
"Sure. Make yourself useful for once." "Hold on a minute. Databanks? Where's your hardware these days?"
"Don't get personal. And pay attention. I'm not running through all this twice. We'll start at the left and go clockwise, beginning with Artemis Daly, a man of many trades. He's a supplier, a fixer. You want it, he can get it for you. Legal or illegal are petty considerations that have never bothered him. If you're late with the payments, he's the one who sends around the leg breakers to reason with you. Next to him, we have Timothy Neeson, banker. He owns this building and a lot more of Mistport. Number one in a very small field, which means that locally he's very powerful. Nothing of an economic nature takes place in Mistport without him taking a cut somewhere along the line. Next to him is Walt Robbins, the biggest landlord in Mythport. He owns everything the bank doesn't. Specializes in slums and sweat houses, because that's where the most money is. Moving down the other side of the table, we have Thomas Stacy. Acts as a lawyer for everyone else here, and for anyone else with enough money to meet his exacting standards. Never lost a case, and that has nothing to do with his legal skills. And finally, we come to Matthew Connolly and Patrick McGowan. Connolly owns and runs the docks, everything from the starport to the landing bays on the River Autumn, and McGowan runs the dock union. Between them, they keep things running smoothly, irrespective of who gets hurt in the process. And there you have the movers and shakers of Mythport in all their sleazy glory. If you killed all of them right now, the smell of Mythport would improve dramatically.
Do you have something to say to us, Deathstalker?
Said Neeson, the banker, a large fat man with a straining waistcoat.
Or are you just going to stand there and stare at us all day?
Just gathering my thoughts. We have a lot of history between us, gentlemen. My father's money brought you to where you are today. Deathstalker money, originally intended to fund an information network here in Mythport. He put you into positions of power and influence so that you could keep track of things for him. Instead, you used his money to become major economic forces in this city, becoming so rich and powerful you forgot your original purpose. Or perhaps you simply decided that such things were no longer important to people as rich and powerful as yourselves.
You guessed it,
said Stacy, the lawyer, long and stringy, with broken veins prominent in his cheeks.
And we've absolutely no intention of becoming politicized again. We don't think in such small ways anymore. We've made over our lives, and we like things fine just the way they are. We will see to it that things stay the way we like. We control the economics here. If you intervene, we will see that people lose their savings. Money becomes worthless, and people starve as food piles up undistributed on the docks. The people in Mythport would rise up and tear you apart if you even tried.
They'd get over it once they saw the old corrupt system being replaced by a fairer one.
Fairness is a relative concept,
said Robbins, the landlord, a short, fat barrel of a man.
There will always be rich and poor. We provide stability. You don't understand the economic realities of a rebel planet like Mistworld.
I understand greed, I understand treachery and self-interest, and I certainly understand blood-sucking scum when I see them.
Oh, that's good. Win them over with flattery.
We know why you're here, said Daly the Fixer, a large, hunched man with a brooding face. You want to take our lives away from us in the name of your rebellion and naive politics. Well, boy, you've come a long way for nothing. These days, our influence extends far beyond Mistworld, with investments on many worlds, even Golgotha. Elias Gutman has been very helpful in shaping our portfolios. Yes, I thought you'd recognize that name. A man of real power and influence. He told us you were coming.
Gutman. He's come crawling around the rebellion more than once, but I've always known his vested interests lie with the Empire. His information comes straight from the Empress herself. When you followed his advice, you did Lionstone's bidding, right here on the rebel planet. Can any of you say conflict of interest?
Oh, money has no loyalties or politics. Gutman has always been a good friend to us.
Yeah, I'll bet he has. And when his loans finally come due, you'll find the money by squeezing it out of the people here who owe you, whether they can afford it or not. And Mistworld will become just another planet breeding itself dry to maintain Golgotha's wealth.